This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to 3-Pre-1-Cast. This podcast is your pit stop for a comedic but educational take on the crazy and illustrious world of Formula One.
We will take you through the latest news and happenings, while also offering our views and perspectives on the key moments, both on and off the track. So, to quote the great David Croft of Sky Sports F1,
it's lights out and away we go. Hello everyone and welcome to 3-Pre-1-Cast. It's great to be here. I'm Stephen and I'm here with Rory today. How are you going, Rory?
Good. We're one member down again this week, but Josh will hopefully be back next week.
Yes, and I'm standing in for Josh on the desk handling the technical side of things, which is interesting.
But it's a bit of an upgrade for you in your role.
It is.
You're sat next to me looking over at Josh running all the computers.
Yeah, normally I feel very smug, but I think we're handling it okay, so hopefully everyone is hearing us out there all okay. So, US Grand Prix, let's get straight into it. Another win for Max Verstappen.
And a bigger win for Red Bull in general.
Wow, yeah. Constructors champions of 2022 now.
It's about time, right? I mean, they came obviously awfully close last year.
Yeah, well, I think for most of last year, it was always going to be Mercedes. But this year, we've kind of known for some time that it's going to be Red Bull. It was just a question of when. When did it become, I guess, mathematically impossible for Ferrari or Mercedes to get it? So, yeah, they're the 2022 Constructors and Drivers World Champion. They've got the double. Pretty dominant showing from Red Bull, eh?
Yeah, I'm just flicking back through the records now. Red Bull were the last team that wasn't Mercedes to win it was Red Bull, all the way back in 2013.
Correct, yeah.
So that is a long reign of Mercedes dominance that's been sort of signified by ending.
Yeah, and I guess it's also sad in a way that it's ended with very little competition from Mercedes. They haven't won a race this entire season. They're in a very distant third. It's not like Mercedes have defended the title particularly well this year.
No, but in saying that, I think even if you look at how efficient Red Bull's been, even if they were, you know, as good as they had been in previous years, it probably would have been another really close championship. So we've still seen a sort of team performing at its highest level, I would say, with Red Bull.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a pretty clinical performance this year. So have you got the standings in front of you?
Do
you
want to
talk us through what else is happening in the Constructors? Because while first might be settled, there's still some bits going on elsewhere.
So Red Bull have obviously cleaned up and they've shot a couple hundred points in front off in second place Ferrari. And I think Ferrari, the sort of battle for second is somewhat on, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
what's the gap between Ferrari and Mercedes?
It's about 55 points.
So okay.
Yeah, it's about 50 points. So Ferrari have 469 and Mercedes have 416. So it's close, right? You know, like if Ferrari has a couple bad runs, if Mercedes finally win a race, it's on. Like it'll be very tight, and that'll be a huge comeback story if Mercedes can pip Ferrari.
Yeah, they'd need a good result because we've got three races to go. So it's Mexico, Brazil, Abu Dhabi.
Mm.
They're going to need a really good result in one of those races, I think, to take it to Ferrari. And, you know, Ferrari all season have proved to be somewhat unreliable. So, you couldn't put it past Mercedes to win this.
I would say
win this fight, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say as well Mercedes have incrementally been getting better almost with every race. I think, you know, they've closed the gap every single weekend that they've been racing just that little bit more. They seem to compete that little bit longer with the likes of Ferrari. And obviously, and we'll get into it a little bit more, but with the US Grand Prix just gone, there was obviously a time that Lewis was leading and potentially could have gone on.
Honestly, I thought when Red Bull made the pit stop mistake,
it was
that I thought that was it handed to Hamilton on a plate, but Red Bull just are that, they're so much further ahead that they could recover that. And the Circuit of the Americas is also a track where you can overtake. It's a
for
track.
Sure. It's a fast track, right?
It's a fast track, but it's got multiple overtaking spots. I think had the same thing happened in Japan, probably, you know, I don't know if Verstappen would have made it past so easily. Well, not like, and Lewis did give him a good fight, I thought, but it was just that track, there was so many overtaking opportunities that the quicker car was always going to make it through.
For sure, and ultimately he was out there on fresh tyres as well. It was medium tyres he went on to.
Yeah, because Hamilton went on to the harder tyre.
Yeah.
So Verstappen, yeah, technically had the medium, which sometimes we've seen in the past that may have worked out for Lewis in terms of Verstappen would eat up his tyres catching Hamilton, and by the time he gets there, Hamilton's longevity
has kicked
keeps
in.
Him ahead. Yeah. But it didn't work out.
I wonder if, you know, maybe it would have been a different story if Max had gone onto like a soft tyre, destroyed them trying to get close to Lewis, and then Lewis had just kicked into his sort of prime tyres.
Well, you have to think that's surely what. But then I'm just thinking, because I was going to say that must have been what Mercedes were thinking, but then again, they pit Hamilton before Verstappen.
Yeah.
And so they wouldn't have known that they were suddenly going to be fighting for the win with Verstappen behind them. They would have been thinking they had to catch Verstappen ahead of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think we've seen that a lot this season, though. A lot of teams, when they're sitting in that sort of third, fourth position with, you know, 15, 20 laps to go, they've often just opted to then see out the rest of the race on that long-term tyre, so that if something falls into their lap, like the race leader having a mess up in the pits like we saw with Max, at least they're positioned now where they can just go for it with their tyres hopefully still in good enough condition to put fast laps in.
Sure.
So I'd say, you know, I'd say it's just been a bit of a strategy that's been adopted this season particularly.
Yeah, absolutely. Back on the standings, do you want to tell us what's happening in the fight for fourth?
Oh, that's my goodness. I mean, look, I'm sort of just looking at the table, and it's really divided into sort of three separate competitive sections. Or four separate competitive sections.
It's always like there's fourth, the fight for fourth is McLaren Alpine, right?
Yep.
And McLaren's leading,
No, so currently Alpine's are leading.
Yep.
They're currently leading by 6 points. So that one is really close. And it's crazy to think that if you look at Alpine, they've had both Alonso and Ocon sort of, they both had good results over the season. They've both sort of traded, you know, form. You know, at some points Alonso's been dominant, some points Ocon's had some better performances in. But then you look over to McLaren, and it's just been Lando.
Mm.
And I think if you put them into a four driver standings, I think Lando Norris is above Ocon and Alonso quite comfortably. So yeah, I mean we can talk about that battle. I think it's so dependent. If Ricciardo can start contributing in these last few races, it should be enough for McLaren to just make up 6 points and get in front. But it's going to be tight. I mean, where would you see that ending up?
Yeah, I think the stronger team is Alpine in terms of the car on raw pace. I think they have the edge,
mm-hmm.
and most people are saying that they have the edge. But McLaren, although they do have this problem of Lando outperforming Ricciardo week in, week out, I think they've been more consistent with their pace, whereas Alpine seems to be a little bit over the place and not sort of, they just can't seem to get this. The thing that McLaren's had a couple of is those races where they've just stayed ahead of everyone else in the midfield, sort of run their own race and come home sort of fifth and sixth. And to be fair, Alpine had it in Japan, where I think they finished fourth and seventh, I want to say, or fourth. They had two cars on the points, but you know, here in the US, they had a pretty crazy race with Alonso,
yeah.
especially.
Yeah.
And although he did technically finish seventh on track, he got a penalty which pushed him out the points. Something that actually could prove, you know,
that could be everything.
That could be the difference between fourth and fifth by the season's end. But obviously, with 6 points in it and three races to go, I mean, you can't call
it
yet
can go
who's going to
really
win that.
Either way, which is really exciting. Yeah, and you know, and with three races, you know, if you've got whatever point share that they're going to get split into three, right? So very quickly, probably within the next race or two, we'll see somebody positioned a lot more likely to win it than the other, but it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah.
Slightly further down the table, we have the battle for sixth going on between Alfa Romeo and Aston Martin. There's 1 point in that.
Yeah,
so
that was really tight. I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's been such an interesting one. I'd love to see like I just can't really picture how it's sort of gone so far this season. I think Alfa Romeo raced out into a bit of a lead on points over Aston Martin, but Aston Martin have sort of chipped away at it recently.
Yeah, Alfa had a really strong start to the season. I'm
Bottas
not sure if you remember.
Was flying.
Yeah, when Bottas was there was over the first few races he finished in the top 10 consistently, but they've never quite had the car that's certainly top of midfield performance. They had a really good race actually. It was Aston who had a really good race in the US Grand Prix. But Aston started the season poorly,
very poorly. Yeah.
And they've sort of, so I guess it's sort of they've had the, it's a tale of two opposites where Alpha has started really strong and sort of plateaued, whereas Aston have come from behind and are now sort of playing the catch-up game. Mm. And, 1 point in it, I mean, very close.
Yeah, I mean, and sort of both teams have their drivers locked in for next year as well, haven't they?
So Aston will have next year Fernando Alonso is moving there with Lance Stroll. And then Alfa will have Bottas and Joe.
And Joe again. Yeah, so I mean, I guess it's interesting. I think Aston Martin are probably in better form. The two drivers have probably been in a little bit better form of recent, so that's really exciting with three races to go. Very easily they could pip them.
Absolutely.
But yeah, and then we look even further down the table and there's a 2-point sort of race between Haas and AlphaTauri. So 36 points for AlphaTauri, 38 for Haas. That's another one that, I don't know.
Could go either way.
That's
it's hard to say. I think that result for AlphaTauri is quite not what they would have wanted when they started the year. But yeah, as it turns out, that's who they're fighting with.
Yeah, I mean, I think off the back of the 2021 season, where they actually performed really well, they came in at sixth. And sixth, as in seventh, was just nowhere near them on about half the points.
Sure.
That was Aston Martin behind them on half the points. Now that they're dropped and they're sitting just over half the points of Aston Martin this year, that's a shocking drop, in my opinion, especially in a development
team. Do you have the 2021 points there in front of you?
Yeah, I do.
So how many points did they get in 2021 and how many do they have now?
So in 2021, they finished with 142 points. And this year, they're currently, with three races to go, sitting on 36.
Yeah, wow, look
that's
at that. That's like
massive.
That's less than, they haven't even got a third of what they got last year.
Yeah, so that's huge. And I'd say as well, though, like if we're actually going to dive into comparing 2021 to where teams are at now, Haas finished last year with no points.
Right, yeah, so it's been a step forward for them.
So a huge step forward. The fact that they're not even second to last, they're eighth with 38 points.
Yeah. I guess the difference we've been through is that there was a regulation change. I think that's probably important to note between 2021 and 22. And I know especially in the case of Haas, they gave up on 2021 very early and went focus efforts on 2022, which I guess has worked for them.
I would say as well, like
to a degree.
Another thing that I personally have overlooked is a bit of a regression from Williams. You know, last year they ended with 23 points.
Wow.
And this year they're on 8.
Yeah.
Obviously not a huge gap, but just the fact that in 10th place is Williams on 8 points and in 9th place is AlphaTauri with 36. That's a big difference.
Though won't, from that 23 points, won't 18 of them will be down to Russell's podium.
Yeah.
Oh, well, no, because it was
half points.
So what? Did he finish second? And he either finished second or third, which means it would be either 7.5 points or 9 points.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of them there from
50%
that sort
of that from a
freak result.
From a freak result, right? Yeah. So, yeah, that's true. But man, I would sort of just reflecting on this now. I mean, obviously we have had Red Bull streak away and win it comfortably, but the fact that we have a lot of tight competition, though it be in sort of different segments of the driving teams, I would say this rule change of making the cars follow better, making overtaking a little bit easier, I think that is likely a product of that rule change.
Sure.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Yeah,
interesting, eh? Interesting. Mm. So it'll hopefully all still chop and change over the next three races, and we'll have a very interesting finish if you're looking at the mid-table.
Yeah, so I believe we're off to Mexico this weekend.
Yes.
Which, Mexico, I always like going there because it's got a really high elevation, which sounds really boring, but the reason why I think it's interesting is because the air is a lot thinner, which means the cars have to run... And I'm probably going to get this wrong, but there's basically an aerodynamic kind of difference where they run, I think it's Monza levels of downforce where they, to produce Monza levels of downforce, so not much downforce, but they have to run Monaco, what they would run in Monaco, which produces lots of downforce. I'm explaining this terribly.
So the car has to be set up like in Monaco, just to generate the
downforce it would have in Monza, or something along those
along
lines. I should have searched this up before I brought it up.
Well, I guess that's it, right? So I mean, there's less drag.
There's less air, so you basically to generate the downforce, you have to put more downforce in because you've got less air coming over the car.
So they have the setup of a street circuit on very much so not a street circuit.
Yeah, and so it always creates this interesting thing where they have to put on more downforce than what you would elsewhere. And we've seen in the past, like Red Bull, I remember back a few seasons ago when they were really strong around like Monaco and those tracks. They were the kings of downforce essentially, and it was the engine that let them down. But... So they always used to be strong around Mexico. And I wonder, the segue that I guess I'm getting to is whether that'll play into Mercedes. We've seen sort of Singapore in particular was sort of a weekend, well, it didn't go their way, but the track style there and the sort of the low downforce circuits, like Hungary as well is another example, and even the Netherlands too, where those tracks suited their cars because they required that sort of car that was good with downforce. And I wonder if that'll benefit them
They're running out of time to get a win this season.
They very much are.
So they have
three races.
Mexico, Brazil, and Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, and Brazil, I guess the only caveat with Brazil is a sprint race as well weekend. So... I don't know if that will help.
I don't know if that'll even count if they win a sprint race. That's such a grey area.
It'd be such a cop out if they only won this, like only won a sprint race.
Yeah, yeah. Just what a crazy season. If you said at the start, Mercedes don't win a race, I'd tell you you're with the fairies.
Yeah,
you know, there's no way. But we're here now, I've just sort of flicked into the driver standings now for 2022 and looking at it with three races to go. There's a real battle between second and third, Charles Leclerc and Sergio Perez. So Leclerc's just in front by 2 points, so that's super tight.
That's Leclerc Perez, did you say? Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll be tight between those two. Certainly down to the wire.
Yeah, I'd say George Russell and Carlos Sainz, there's 16 points between them, and there's heaps of points between Perez and Russell, so I don't foresee much changing there. I guess Carlos Sainz actually has Lewis Hamilton only 4 points behind him, so if there was to be a Mercedes win, then that's probably likely would also see Lewis jump Carlos Sainz.
Sure.
Which is interesting, which again, at the start of the season, the way it unfolded with the porpoising of and the lack of performance from Mercedes, you wouldn't have expected Hamilton to finish above Sainz.
Yeah, above a Ferrari, which at the start of the season was dominant.
I guess it looks pretty confirmed now that George Russell will finish ahead of Lewis Hamilton in the driver standings, which is also insane.
Yeah, that's a good victory for Russell if he can hold on to it.
First season with the team, and he's kind of knocked over the goal.
So how many points are between them?
Let me have a look here. So George Russell is on 218 and Lewis Hamilton's 198. So not out of the question.
So 20 points,
but
yeah.
It's a 20
so
point
if Hamilton,
gap.
If Hamilton got a win and Russell's engine exploded during that race, Hamilton moves back ahead.
Yeah, exactly. So. It's not impossible, but I wouldn't say it's likely.
Sure.
And then I guess just looking down, we actually don't... I guess the next close battle, which I don't know how much... hunger there is from the fans to know the end result of this, but Kevin Magnussen and Daniel Ricciardo are only 3 points apart.
Oh, okay.
The rest of the drivers are actually, there's about a 10-point gap pretty evenly among them all, so there could be some change.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Did you hear, I'm going to segue back into the US Grand Prix, mm-hmm. which we should probably talk about, and yeah. you mentioned Ricciardo there. Mm-hmm. Did you see or hear about the interview that Ricciardo gave after his US Grand Prix where he finished out of the points?
I did not. I didn't see it.
It's pretty grim. I've just pulled up here some of the quotes. I'm just going to read you what he had to say.
I'm kind of glad I hadn't watched it already.
So it said, speaking after the race, Ricciardo was visibly deflated and was at a loss to explain his lack of speed in an interview that makes for painful viewing.
Oof.
And he said, quote, "I have no idea what to say. Honestly, it's 2022. It's been just so far off the pace that I simply can't lean on it, can't push, can't get the time out of it. Also, the inconsistency of the lap times, it shows that it can really be a struggle. But to have such a big margin again remains a mystery. I love Texas. I love Austin. But that race itself for me was not enjoyable. When you think it can't get worse, it does. I don't know how I'm continuing to continue because painful is an understatement."
Oh.
I mean, it sums up to me, that interview just sums up the year that he's had, which has just been horrific, unfortunately. For someone who's so well-liked, you know, someone who had, just a few years ago, such a bright, you know, was one of the sport's leading stars, yep. one of the leading people of the sport, and now, you know, he's had this dismal season, he's been replaced by a guy who has no experience, you know, sure, yeah. Oscar Piastri's a great up-and-coming driver, but
no,
you know,
Formula One.
He's been replaced by him,
yeah.
and, you know, performances aren't coming, and now he doesn't have a drive in 2023, you know, not going to be on the grid next year.
The brutal thing with Formula One, right, and I think if you look across at other sports, if a good football player, let's say, for example, has a bad season, or a couple bad seasons, at least there's enough teams, there's enough clubs in the sport where they might get still picked up by a decent team, they can turn it around. In Formula One, because it's so competitive, you have literally 10 teams, that's it, no more, and only 3 to 4 of them are like top tier teams. Exactly. Daniel's not going to get given, it's too competitive for him to get another competitive drive. So actually, that deflation is just surely his acknowledgement of the fact that any dream of racing in a top team again, any dream of winning a world championship is so far gone.
Absolutely.
That
Absolutely.
It is just, it's over, and it's, you have to feel for him because he's such a positive guy usually.
And just to think when he left Red Bull, it was like, you know, it was kind of like acknowledged that, you know, this guy has the potential to be a world champion, probably can't do it with Red Bull given the situation with Verstappen, so he's going to go off somewhere else and do it. And, you know, he went to Renault, things weren't working out there. Oh, he'll move to McLaren, and when the new rules kick in 2022 and everything's equalised, you yeah. know, that will be his year, sort of thing, was the, you know, the long-term vision back in 2018 when he, or late 2017 when he left and he came to Renault in 2018. And to think where it's gone since there, then it's actually turned out to be kind of the spelling, the end of his career. Whereas for many, it seemed like that was going to be the period where it was maybe the tough period to get through to the
yeah.
amazing period, the championship winning period. And that
yeah.
that's just so far, far away now. I don't think it's possible.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it was like really sink or swim, and he sunk.
That's probably the best analogy, really, actually, that I've heard.
And I guess a question I'd like to ask you on that, actually, though, is, the whole, like, last season wasn't great from Ricciardo. Not, you know, I think McLaren as a whole struggled. This year, he's been the standout underperforming driver in the team.
Sure.
We've now had nearly the whole season, and it doesn't look like they've adjusted the car in any beneficial way to help him. If he's, you know, if his cry out for help is the fact that his driving style is not aligning with the Mercedes, how come there's not been a big tune-up, or there's not been any sort of development in the drive?
I just think there must be something in there that just is not, that just cannot be changed. Like no matter what you do
or something.
Well, yeah, I'm not quite sure what it would be, but just, the way the car works just obviously is not suited to him, and that's not something, I think this year has proven that it's not something that can be overcome. And also, I think, you know, confidence and sort of, you know, he's clearly lost his mojo, his who he was.
Yeah, his spark.
Sort of his spark.
Yeah.
And I just think that, yeah, it's sort of that, maybe that, you know, once things start going bad, you start thinking negatively and then things just go down from there, you know, like... And it's just sort of been this waterfall that he hasn't been able to overcome of just, you know what I mean, like all this pressure building on him, race after race.
And it sort of compounds, right? Because two or three bad results means the
that's what I'm trying to say. It compounds, and just gets worse and worse.
I mean, that interview alone really just, it's clearly taking a toll on him, and maybe even for his sake,
maybe a year on the sidelines is might be what he needs. But I just question it as well, because I think he's mid-30s, but, you know, he's not in his 20s or something. If this had happened 5 or 6 years ago, maybe he could have had a second stint almost in F1, but I just don't. I think he's too old to
come back. He's 33.
33, yeah. I think he's too old to come back, you know, another year and then come back and have a successful...
Yeah, whether you can...
Because he'd have to, first of all, rebuild his reputation to then get a seat in a top team. I mean, it could happen if he got really lucky and, you know, signed with Haas, for example, and then they hit the jackpot and have the fastest car. But I think he's too old now to be, you know, getting a Ferrari driver or a Mercedes drive future.
You do look at Alonso, and Alonso's different pedigree, I understand that. You know, two world championships... Easily could have had 4. Easily probably even could have had 5.
Sure.
Different sort of pedigree racer, I get that. But you just look at what, you know, the fact that, yes, age is a factor, but it's less of a factor than form. So I think his main barrier is his form. So if he did, let's say for he has a year on the sidelines, maybe he's a backup driver for a team. I've read some rumours.
There's been some
rumours
that he might be a reserve driver for Mercedes, but some of those were quashed, so I'm not quite sure where he stands.
Let's say hypothetically he's a reserve driver for a decent team, right? Let's say that means next season he actually does get a race or two. If he was to then come in on like a one-off race next year or do 2 races and was in a decent car and it just happened to all click and work and he had a couple good races, Daniel Ricciardo finishes in the top 4 twice next year out of his 2 races. I think just with the way hype works and excitement works, I wonder if he'd be 34 years old. I do wonder if then that might even be enough to get some interest, but I just can't see how any team... I don't think he would ever go back to Alpine, formerly Renault, and I can't see why he'd want to race for anyone below them.
Yeah.
And that's the conundrum.
For that to happen, you need a lot of blocks to fall in place for him.
Yeah.
And then he's got to deliver.
So I think it's unlikely.
Unlikely, but I think it's not impossible.
That's true.
Not impossible. Just on the US Grand Prix, did we want to talk about... Or what's your thoughts on, I guess, there were 2 main incidents during that race which have got people talking. There was the first corner where Russell went into Sainz. Any thoughts around that?
I guess obviously Russell received a 5-second penalty, right, from that incident.
Mm-hmm.
My slight unpopular opinion on that would be that Carlos Sainz took that corner like there was no other drivers around. And I mean that by... He came wide. He was on the outside of Verstappen. No, it would have been Perez, I think.
He was... No, it was Verstappen had got ahead of him.
Yeah.
And then...
And he was sort of on the... Towards the rear right tyre. Verstappen somewhat went wide. Yeah, did sort of run wide on that corner as per his racing line to sort of actually hold off Sainz. Sainz then almost went 90 degrees in towards the apex. But... This is the first corner of the race. There are 15, 16 cars right behind you doing, you know, they're all trying to jump on the inside. They're all trying to make up places. I think, yes, it was probably fair that that Russell got penalised. But equally, I'd say Sainz was racing like he was, him and Max were the only ones on the track. That's the sort of move you make when you are 15 laps in, and you've got good gaps behind you. So, yeah, I kind of understand that the stewards' hands were sort of tied. They had to punish Russell, but equally, I think Sainz, it was clumsy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think maybe I kind of agree with you there that I think Sainz could have been smarter about it, but at the same time, you know, he's there to he's, you know, racing to win, and I think he pulled. He could see that he had to switch back on Verstappen,
yeah,
if he had any chance of taking the fight to him. And yet, as he did that, that's obviously then hindered Russell. I think blame can sort of be put a little bit on both of them. But yeah, at the end of the day, yeah, Russell hit Sainz.
Yep.
And that's what I think it comes back to, why he got
the
penalty.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Is that, yeah, if all of this could have just been avoided if Russell had been a little bit more cautious, I guess.
Oh, but equally, I think, could have been avoided if Sainz also was taking it more like the first quarter of the race rather than...
Well, but I don't know if it's enforceable of, or like this expectation of take it like the first quarter.
No, you can't
There's
penalise.
There's a piece of racetrack. Yeah. You know, yeah, gonna, I think you know, yeah, what I'm trying to say. Like, yeah, you can't sort of penalise that thought.
No, like, science didn't need to be penalised, but equally, I would say...
Could have been avoided if he, yeah, had not been as aggressive.
Because how often do we actually see first corners, first, second, third corners off the race? Yes, like, switchbacks can be made, overtaking opportunities can be made, but equally a lot of the top drivers who understand that their time will come later in the race. I know Lewis is sort of renowned for this. At the start of the race, he won't make any huge risks.
Mm.
He will quite comfortably go, I might lose out a place here if I hang wide, but I'm not going to have an incident like what happened on the first corner of the US Grand Prix this weekend, like with Sainz cutting back in. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess now if I sort of look at it from looking at it as like a critical view of Carlos Sainz, I would also say that it wasn't demonstrating much patience, which to me speaks to a driver who's not necessarily driving with confidence, enough confidence in the car and himself to back him to make up those positions later in the race. He felt he had to go for that inside dive, which I don't know if I don't think Lewis would do it. I don't think Max would do it. I don't even think Perez would do it.
Yeah, but in saying that, I think he would have. You've got to remember that the last few races, all he's been seeing is the Red Bull dominance,
yeah,
and the Red Bull, yeah, just overtaking everyone quickly, swiftly. You know, if you don't fight then, you know, he's probably thinking, if I don't fight now, I'm not going to have a chance to fight at,
yeah,
all.
No, that's true. That's
which
true.
Is probably the counter. But should we move on? I think that I didn't actually expect to get that much,
yeah,
conversation,
no,
out of that one, because,
yeah,
the one that everyone's talking about, of course, is the Alonso
Wheelie
and Stroll incident.
Yeah.
Which, that one really, like, just caught me off guard. I remember I was watching and you just, because it was such a weird place for something like that to happen. And honestly, you don't see that happen very much with, you know, a collision on the straight as it was. How did you see that incident?
I actually feel like I need to go and watch it in more detail, because obviously I saw the events unfold. What it looked like to me is Alonso steamed up the rear of Stroll, obviously was just slipstreaming. He was probably going to dart out on the inside and take the place. Stroll shifted across, not a huge amount, like you could never consider that weaving. That was pretty typical. I think at that point Alonso was too close behind. He also tried to make the move at that current moment. I think it was pretty unfortunate. I'd say the blame lies on Alonso for just being too close.
Interesting.
I think he had enough distance. He had enough width to the left and to the right of Stroll, and he had enough distance still on the straight where he didn't need to make the overtake so tight.
Yeah,
I think he overcooked how close he got. Stroll, a little bit of movement that was unfortunate timing, but again, it's not Stroll's, you know, he's not trying to pick his moment to move left and right. He's defending his spot. It's more the driver behind will be reacting. That's then obviously nicked Nando, and yeah, it's gone terribly.
See, I actually disagree with you completely,
nice,
on this one, because
I'd love to hear that.
I think Stroll just jinked far too late to the left.
So
he moved.
Do you think Alonso moved first and then Stroll tried
to
cover him?
Alonso had pulled out, had made it clear that he was going up the left-hand side, and just as he's sort of going for it is when a Stroll puts in, to me, a very late jink to the left.
See, I'm going to have to look at it, because that's interesting, because if that's the case, if Alonso moved out first and then Stroll covered him across, then I would happily sort of reverse why how I sort of put the blame on Alonso there. That's really interesting. But equally, even with that position, do you still think Alonso came up too close behind Stroll and was still potentially
I think he did what any other driver would do in that situation.
Fair enough.
And I think the move would have been fine if Stroll continued in a straight line. The problem was Stroll jinked to the left, and that's why Alonso crashed into the back. I see it very simply, kind of black and white like that, to be honest with you.
So who got, because Alonso got pretty heavily punished though.
No. So what Alonso got penalised for in the end, he got penalised because they sent his car back out this incident.
After the mirror had fallen off.
The mirror had fallen off.
So and it he was got deemed.
So now you're forcing me to explain this to our entire listeners for anyone who doesn't know. No, well, technically he didn't get a meatball. And the meatball in this situation, meatball is a name for one of the flags that they can that the stewards can give. So if you see a flag come out and it's like it's a black flag that has an orange spot in the middle, basically means that you've got car damage and you have to pit to fix the damage because the damage is so bad. And it kind of, to some people, looks like a meatball.
So the Americans
call it. Well, I've raced with some Americans online who call it like doing esports, and yeah, they call it a meatball, and iRacing people call it a meatball. So yeah, it's a meatball flag. But the contentious thing was in the Alonso situation, though, is that so Haas protested against it. They felt a meatball should have been thrown for Alonso, should have been given to him, so he had to come and fix the damage, because that's happened to them a couple of times this season with Kevin Magnussen, where he's been told to come and fix the damage. And eventually the stewards ruled in favour, technically, I guess, of Haas, and gave Alonso a penalty and dropped him out of the points from P7. I don't know where he actually finished in the end, but out of the points. But still pretty phenomenal when you think about it. I guess it's a reflection of how well the cars are built these days. Excuse me. That Alonso basically got catapulted in the air after crashing into Stroll, hit the barrier, and was able to come back into the pits and continue.
Yeah, I mean,
pretty impressive.
He finished down in 15th, so it's pretty significant, especially after how we discussed the tight battle between Alpine and McLaren. But, so how did that unfold with Stroll, and was he penalised in the end? I mean, at some point...
I don't know. Let me have a
search on that, because obviously, it's at this point in the season, and we've already discussed how tight things are, that's very significant for both teams if either of them have lost points. Maybe it's something that is still being processed and looked at by the stewards, though. I mean, it often does take potentially 2 or 3 days in order for them to... In order for them to make a decision on it.
Yeah, I'm just having a look now. I can see I've got an article about it here, but I can't actually see if it says. Doesn't actually say if anyone was penalised.
Could it be put down as a racing incident?
Well, that's what this article's saying, that Alonso put it down. Like he believed it was a racing incident. The stewards handed Stroll a three-place grid penalty for Mexico.
Oh, right, okay. Okay. Oh, that's really interesting.
I think that's true.
That might give Latifi a chance not to start at the bottom.
That's a cheap shot. That
is a cheap shot.
Anyway, I guess one bit of news that I wanted to talk about with you, and I'm interested to see how much you know about this, because it's some of the off-track drama. Although Red Bull may have won the Drivers' Championship and the Constructors' Championship, something that's bringing them down a little bit at the moment is some allegations around the COSCAT. From 2021, and allegations, essentially the governing body of Formula One, so the FIA, has accused Red Bull of overspending above the cost cap last year. It's considered a minor overspend, and some media reports have put it at about $1.8 million over the $145 million cap. Mm. So we're not talking huge amounts of overspending. But what are your thoughts around some of the revelations? Do you know much about it and what's going on?
Or? Yeah, like, I guess a couple of weeks ago when we sort of heard that there was a report going to be coming out soon to basically analyse.
Yeah, it started a couple of weeks ago. There was definitely some talk around that Red Bull had broken the rules.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that's the thing, right? So $1.8 million to someone who doesn't particularly know Formula One might sound like a lot of money. In reality, $1.8 million is maybe enough to cover a couple front wings.
Well, yeah, well, this is the thing, is that some of the rival teams have made it pretty clear that they believe that $1.8 million would give you a pretty big advantage in that, you know, $1.8 million of extra car development essentially would give you more time, whereas Red Bull have claimed that it's given them no advantage whatsoever.
Mm.
And some of the spending apparently relates to the way or the amount of catering they've provided at their factory. But then the counterpoint has been raised that if you're catering is a little bit over, you know, it's not necessarily the catering you have to cut. You see what I'm saying? Like, you could, you know, where you've spent that extra, you've still spent extra money overall.
Yeah.
And maybe you've spent a little bit too much on car development. I don't know. I think it's a tough situation at the moment because there's not much transparency around that, what has fully happened.
So that's my kind of point on it, I think. Overspending $1.8 million could be huge. It could mean nothing because until we understand what that 1.8 million, because obviously when you have they have basically a cost gap a cost gap limit of $145 million back in for the 2021 season. Breaking it by 1.8, if that 1.8 went on car development, okay, big deal. We've actually got to look at this. We've got to figure out how significant and how influential was that. If it went on catering, which from a sort of outlooker's perspective, if you overspent your catering by nearly $2 million, to me that seems like a pretty wishy-washy sort of, oh no, we promise it went on catering, not car development. You know, like
it's such a hard one to sort of make a ruling on, isn't it?
And that's the thing, right? So there's talk that they're going to receive a fine that's obviously double of $1.8 million. So $3.6 million would potentially be a fine.
I hadn't seen that talk, actually.
Yeah, so I was just reading now about how they're potentially going to receive a fine of $3.6 million. I'm reading it on RN365.
Oh, okay, racing news, yeah.
But which you would maybe look at and go, okay, well, that's fair, you know, net they've actually lost the $1.8 million that they spent last year. Now, the problem is last year was a championship winning season for Max Verstappen.
And this gets really controversial because, you know, those few, if they've gained a couple of tenths from that extra money or a tenth, you know, even a tenth, you know, it kind of, when you consider just how close the margins were in that 2021 season, it's just another unfortunate controversy that clouds that season.
Yeah, I think Red Bull will be looking to put even that victory quite quickly behind them in the history books and talk a lot about this year's one, just because there was so much controversy, and it's continued to drive controversy even now towards the end of the following season.
Yeah, and that's the one thing I do like about Verstappen winning this title is at least it's not like, you know, this year Red Bull dropped the ball and then Verstappen never won another world championship and he only ever won this very controversial one. Like, it's good that he's actually won fair and square. You know, no doubt now that he is a world champion.
For sure.
That's just a little caveat. But on the cost cap, so what we're hearing now is that the FIA and Red Bull are in talks about an accepted breach agreement, which is effectively a settlement between the teams.
Yeah.
Red Bull would admit wrongdoing and they would accept a punishment, which would probably be lesser, you know, or, you know, maybe more stringent than if they went the other way, which
full
is not accept the settlement, and then it goes before an adjudication panel that is set up for the cost cap and involves judges, you know, who then review everything, look everything, and make a ruling. Mm. So obviously a lot more timely, probably going to be harsher. The problem, though, is that with this agreement, you know, well, it's presumed that Red Bull would have to accept wrongdoing. And at the moment, Red Bull's public statements are, we haven't done anything wrong and we believe that we are under the cost cap. One report, I think it was from Sky Sports F1, said that when Red Bull filed the cost, basically their final costings, they actually thought they were $4.5 million under the cost cap.
Mm.
And now, you know, they're obviously being accused by the FIA of being $1.8 million over. Or whatever.
Well, then there's potentially actually more room for even more penalty if they've actually underreported and then had a further audit.
I don't think it's that simple. I think the issue at play is what is considered in the cost cap and what isn't. Where do you draw the line on these things? Yep. And what Red Bull has sort of been saying. There was an amazing press conference, which I haven't actually seen, but I've read the transcript of, where Zak Brown, who has...
Oh, yeah. He referred to it as cheating.
Yeah, has called it cheating.
Yeah.
And Christian Horner were in a press conference on Saturday in the United States. And basically every question during the press conference was about the cost cap.
Yeah.
And, Horner was sort of getting at the fact that these are very technical, very detailed regulations. And it's like... it's kind of this issue of where do you draw the line in the sand sort of thing.
It'll be interesting to see how Drive to Survive maybe depict this.
Yeah, I will be interested. The other point to make, and Horn has been making this as well, is that this is the first year of the cost cap as well. So it's not like the teams have been doing this for years. This is the first time they've had to go through this cost cap process. So
I think if Red Bull didn't win last season, then this would be much less of a big deal. I think, obviously, the fact that it was already a controversial win, I think, has only added to now the fear of where did that $1.8 million go? Yeah.
So the potential punishments that they face, I was having a look at this earlier, so they could get a fine.
Mm-hmm.
The regulations don't sort of say or give any guidance of what it could punishment. Be.
I guess it's circumstantial, right? How significant the...
Yeah, so the regulations lay out the punishment. Just on the fine, though, they don't give any guidance of like how much the fine should be or anything. It just says case by case. Or they could be given a minor sporting penalty. Ooh. Which a minor sporting penalty could take the form of a public reprimand, which is basically, I think, just a public, you've done wrong.
Yeah, like a bit of humiliation.
Yeah, yeah. They could have points deducted. And a key note here is they could have points deducted from either the Constructors or the Drivers' World Championship, which from a very technical standpoint does mean potentially Max Verstappen's points could be deducted. Though I think, I'm going to strongly say now, I think most people acknowledge that that's not the right thing to do because, you know, it's not specific to Max. This is a team issue. You take the points from the Constructors.
Are you talking about deduct the points from last season or this season?
Last season.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I think that's highly unlikely. I think they would go, if anything, because what they can do is the Constructors and Drivers' points are separate. So they could take... For argument's sake here, they could take all the points off the Constructors and it doesn't affect the Drivers' Championship at all, only the Constructors' Championship, which Red Bull didn't win anyway, so it doesn't really matter that much. The other options are race suspensions. They could hand that down, potentially.
Yeah.
They could limit testing on new parts, or they could reduce this year's cost cap, which... I don't know how those last two are going to work because we're so far into the season. I don't know then if it could go over to the next season. The regulations are a little bit confusing on that. But those are essentially the punishments that Red Bull could face. But I do think that, alluding back to that article that you were talking about before, I think a fine is what they'll probably get.
I imagine a fine will be what sort of put out there. I don't know. It's one of those things, right? Like, I sort of come back to my point earlier. If the $1.8 million went on too many sandwiches for the team over a year, okay, big deal. If the $1.8 million developed a new element of the front wing that gave them 0.2 every single race last season, then okay, now that's when I'd actually, if they can figure it out.
The key question they need to answer is whether this has helped their performance or not.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Yeah.
Right, I want to move on because we've only got 5 minutes left. How are we going to end those last 5 minutes?
Well, we've obviously got some exciting races coming up, so I think we should cover off some predictions.
Predictions.
Is there anything before we do that? Is there anything from the United States Grand Prix that we want to cover?
I think we've covered it pretty well.
Yeah, it was a good race. It was a good race.
Was a good race. There's a little bit of excitement. I mean, the track's great there because there's good overtaking, so that always makes it a bit more exciting.
For sure.
To jump into predictions, Mexico, I'm going to go Mercedes win.
Oh.
I think...
Which one?
It just... well, I think it will be Hamilton.
Okay.
But I think it'll be Hamilton. I don't know why I'm getting so specific on my prediction here, but I'm going to be specific. It's like it's meant to be Russell, but something happens, you know? Like Russell's leading and then he has an engine failure or a botched pit stop or something, and that sort of gets handed to Hamilton in a way. That's my prediction.
And so you're sort of basing that.
I think those weird atmospheric...
The weird atmospheric, the car setup.
The fact that there's little air up there and the car setup, I just think it's going to give Mercedes that little edge. And Red Bull, they've won everything now. They might, I don't know...
Take the foot off the gas a bit.
You know, yeah, I kind of wonder.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean... Well, I think... Do you know what? I would actually counter that prediction and think, I don't think Mercedes will win a race this year. I think it's done. I think it's too late.
Will Red Bull win all three races, the last three races?
Yes.
Interesting. Do you think Verstappen will win all three races?
I think he'll win the last two, and I think Checo will win.
Okay. Interesting.
I just think I can almost see it. I don't think this would ever happen because, ultimately, even for Max Verstappen, adding an extra podium win is brilliant. You know, it's great for his stats. He pads out his stats a little bit more. But I could almost see he's been so dominant this season where if it was 1-2 Verstappen, Perez onto the final straight, I could almost see Verstappen just hitting the brakes, letting Checo win the race. Like, it's almost at that level where he's won the season, like, not only pretty comfortably with, you know, three races in hand, but equally... There's not really been much drama around Max Verstappen.
He's been a lot more composed this year.
It's because that competition hasn't been... Yeah.
Well, yes, but also I think there's been a couple of times, especially in the races with Charles Leclerc, especially the one that I always bring it back to is Saudi Arabia, that showed something to me with Verstappen because he could have very easily been very aggressive against Leclerc there and bottled it. He didn't. He was calm. I just think he's been calmer this year.
It's almost like...
Part of that, yes, I think, is because there's not been as much competition, but also I think he's matured.
But I think winning a championship, that now that he's got that first one over the line, he doesn't have to push it so hard. You know, he's true. Already achieved. So, yeah, look, my prediction is for the Mexican Grand Prix is that Checo will win. And look, I'm not making it my prediction, but if Max Verstappen pumps the brakes before he crosses the line and allows Checo to come through, you heard it here first.
Okay, you've definitely got it nice and early. Well, that's all we have time for tonight. So thanks very much for joining us, everyone. Thanks, Rory, for being here. It's been great to chat.
Thank you, Stephen.
And we've got the Mexican Grand Prix coming up this weekend.
We'll be back next week for another podcast.
We will be, actually. So we'll be able to discuss that amazing Mercedes victory then, won't we?
Oh, we will. We will.
Alrighty. Sorry, I'm taking over from Josh, but here we go.
Take care, guys.
Thanks for listening to 3Pre1Cast. If you want to catch up on any of our episodes, check us out on Plains FM, Apple Podcast, or Spotify.
Come and say hi to us on Instagram and TikTok at 3Pre1Cast.